everybody. Welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn. And joining me today for the first time in a little while is Orest from Orest Talks Football. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, big up, Kyle. Good to see you, man. It's been a while, but yeah, pleasure to be here and thank you for the invite.
Yeah, and it's good to be talking about a win after the downer of losing at home to Fulham, which is never a good result for United at Old Trafford. First time since we lost to Fulham at Old Trafford for 20 years, I believe. But we are back to winning ways in the FA Cup against Forest, albeit it was a pretty drab affair. It was a bit of a snooze fest, really. United were wasteful in front of goal again. Forest didn't really offer much, and whatever they did offer, Onana was equal to. And United scoring from a set piece right at the end of the game. And the only man who seems to be able to score from a header from our corners or free kicks is Casemiro. And once again, getting on the end of a set piece and winning us the game. You know, I think he got cut in the process. Brilliant that United have got to the FA Cup quarterfinals, because our season depended upon it. And if we didn't get through last night, then our season was effectively over, because personally, I don't believe that United are going to qualify for the Champions League unless that fifth spot becomes a Champions League spot. And even then, imagine if fifth spot becomes a Champions League spot in England and United still don't make it into the Champions League. That would be hugely embarrassing, which is possible. But let's be positive for now. We're into the FA Cup quarterfinals, Orest. How did you see it last night?
Yeah, obviously for me, slow. I thought the way we were trying to pass around, I thought it was a bit slow. But no, obviously a good win. Obviously, Casemiro header, he had the cut at the end. But yeah, Forest, I thought, you know what, second half, they didn't offer too much. I thought Onana did well. Obviously, Casemiro with the goal, Bruno with assist. Obviously, a lot of talks about Bruno and his form recently, but yeah. But now, obviously, it's good to get in the next round. Quarterfinals against Liverpool should be tough and should be a good one to watch, but no. I still think we was very slow yesterday. And, you know, for me, the only reason why we won is because, like I said, Nottingham Forest, they were a bit poor as well. So, yeah, but no, big mention to Casemiro with the header. And, yeah, I thought it was a good cross from Bruno, really, overall. But, yeah, it's good to go for the next round. And whether or not we play well or not, it's about getting through. But, really, obviously, we've got big games coming up. We need to start. You know, we need to start playing well, because we are playing inconsistent recently, and results do happen at Fulham. Like, when we start to still play inconsistent, then it'll come back to bite us. So, look, I think it's good that we've qualified, but lots of improvements to make for me.
Yeah, I think Ten Hag was just happy with getting the result last night after what happened against Fulham. Didn't really care about the performance. I thought United were quite cautious, especially with the midfield that lined up with McTominay alongside Casemiro. And I think United were not really playing too many progressive passes at times, I felt. They were just kind of happy to keep the ball. So they weren't taking many risks. I suppose Ten Hag probably learnt from the defeat at Forest back on the 30th of December. He was determined not to get caught out on the counter-attack. So we certainly were risk-adverse last night, to say the least. But just looking at some of the stats, Bruno is often accused of stat padding. His stats tend to look better than his performances, and last night was probably one of those occasions. He had 40 passes completed, 6 out of 7 tackles won, 6 chances created, 5 shots on goal, 1 big chance created, and 1 assist. So happy to see him performing slightly better than what he has been this year, albeit it was against Forest, who are not the greatest of opposition. Even when we lost to them in December, I didn't think Forest were that great. I think we just gifted it to them. So Bruno needs to build on this, because he's had a difficult season, hasn't he?
He has. And obviously, there's a lot of people saying that, oh, let's get rid of him in the summer and let's move on for him. But look, I think he's had a difficult season. Obviously, especially with the Captain Armband situation. Obviously, we gave him that at the beginning. So, look, we're going to Bruno. I just think, you know what? You just need to continue. Now, I know you got an assist yesterday, but you need to game by game do the same thing, because otherwise, obviously, you know, fans will get onto him. We want him to do the basics of Mithuna, which is to create, get assists, get goals. But yeah, but no, for me, look, Bruno, he's had a tough season. Before the Forest game, he's had a very, very tough patch of form. So for me, he just needs to keep a game by game for me. Keep going, keep getting the assists, keep getting the goals, and we'll start giving him credit. Like, I'm pretty sure the United fans will give him credit once he starts doing getting goals and assists.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can finish the season strongly. Same with Onana. If he played the way he did last night in every single game, there'd be no issues at all. He's just a bit erratic at times. You never know what you're going to get from him. I'm hoping he can be a bit more consistent as well. Because last night, he actually looked like a proper goalkeeper, and I haven't said that very often this season. He was definitely one of our better performances performers last night. Obviously, Casemiro was given man of the match by Alan Shearer for getting the winning goal. Would you go along with that, or would you give somebody else man of the match, Horst?
I think it's fair. I think it's fair, to be honest. I would have picked Casemiro, yeah. So, look, I think it's fair. And obviously, there was a lot of United fans obviously going into Alan Shearer because of what he said about Rashford, which for me, I think is wrong. I feel he was absolutely right about Rashford. So, look, Alan Shearer gave him Casemiro another match. There's nothing I can disagree about, like winning goal. And yeah, that's about it, really.
Alan Shearer was quite critical of Rashford last night at one point in the game. He's obviously received a lot of criticism from the supporters who feel that he has not been given his all this season. I mean, I personally can accept a player being out of form for a little while, but if he's not given 100%, then I'm hugely disappointed in the player. And Rashford has been speaking to the Players Tribune today in an interview, and he has been defending himself. There's been lots of quotes that have come out of this. Here's one. I promise you, the world has not seen the best of this United squad and these players. We want to be back playing in the Champions League. We'll be back where we belong. If you back me, good. If you doubt me, even better. And he reiterated that playing for United is his dream, and he has no intentions of going anywhere, and he wants people to understand him more. It was quite a lengthy interview with lots of quotes in there, but he says that he loves the club, and it's been his dream from he was young to play for United. But I can only base my opinions on what I see, and I don't see a player that's given 100% when United don't have the ball. What do you think, Horst?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because for me, I've been very, very onto Rashford this season, and you know, there's lots of clips going online, like one clip obviously against Luton where he was walking around Ross Barkley. So for me, look, interview today, I saw it. I'm not going to believe anything, because I think it's a lot of PR work. Like, for me, I think action speaks louder than words. And look, obviously, there's a quote where he said that he's very committed, which I think that's a lie, because look, yeah, the club warned him about going clubbing, but then a month later, he still goes and turns up there to training. So for me, I'm not going to believe those words. But look, it just reminds me of the match against Villarreal, where he came out, you know, and then to be saying, oh, these players are strong, blah, 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 we'll fight, and something else like that. But look, Rashford, he's not, when he plays as a striker, when I see Tenno playing as a striker, I think we're playing with nine men, or even worse, because for me, he doesn't know the basics, what now fans demand, like pressing, like For me, he just walks around. He doesn't fight. Doesn't fight. And also, I see some certain moments where he's scared to put in a tackle or dodging up the football. So for me, look, action speaks louder than words. I know I saw the interview today, but I'm not going to believe those words that he said. He came up tonight. So, yeah. But no, Rashford needs to do way, way, way more. Because if you're saying that he loves Man United, then you have to show like action speaks louder than words for me.
Yeah, 100% agree with you on that. I mean, you mentioned there the way Ross Barkley was able to just walk around him and Rashford didn't remotely put in a challenge. He was just at walking pace, and then going out clubbing two nights in a row and missing training as a result, and then the Newport game on top of that, because he missed training. Those are the things that concern me. No matter what, his words have to be backed up by actions, and he will ultimately be judged on what he does on the field, not what he says in interviews. So I agree with you that this doesn't really mean anything to me. They're just simply words. He's only got 6 goals all season after getting 30 last season. And what are we? We must be pretty close to 3/4 of the way through the season now, and 6 is a very small total for a player of his quality. So that tells a story in itself. He's just had a very inconsistent career, because the season before he got the 30 goals, he only got 5 goals in that season. That was the season where Ranić was manager for half the season, and when Solskjaer was dismissed. So he's very up and down with his form. And, you know, we expect more from a player, not only a player of his quality, but a forward playing for Manchester United. And we talk about his lack of work rate there. The easiest comparison to make is with Alejandro Garnacho, who works his socks off when United don't have the ball. Anthony as well, the much maligned Anthony, heavily criticised for his attacking output and being predictable, but nobody can accuse him of not working hard. So Rashford stands out like a sore thumb. You know, Rashford is starting to remind me and other people of Martial, the way he's conducted himself this season. In fact, both of them started in that game against Newcastle and they were appalling. United were effectively playing with 9 men in that match, and Ten Hag hooked both of them I think midway through the second half. So yeah, Rashford really needs to get back to the enthusiastic Rashford that broke onto the scene under Van Gaal. Otherwise, his career is going to peter out. So let's see how it develops. Were you slightly surprised last night that Kobbie Mainoo was left out of the starting 11?
I was a bit, because obviously we all expected Casemiro and Mainoo to start together. But I kind of understand that. I think he wants to try resting for the City game this weekend. So I can understand it, but when I looked at the midfield and saw Casemiro and McTominay, we and I were shocked and surprised. But look, it's good to see that Ten Hag obviously doesn't want to use Mainoo a lot and use his injury a lot. So hopefully he got that well-deserved rest. But yeah, definitely caught a surprise to my eyes with that lineup.
Yeah, because for me, Mainoo has been, along with Højlund, he's been our probably most important player in this calendar year. I can understand the concept of getting him a rest, maybe because Højlund has picked up an injury. The manager is also afraid of something similar happening to Mainoo if he's overplayed. But I thought in a very, very important game like that, our only chance of winning the trophy, it was a big risk to leave him out, but we got away with it. And he was a brilliant player to bring on at the end because he's so good at, you know, holding on to possession. You know, you couldn't get the ball off him in a phone box. So he was the man definitely for the end of the game when we're just trying to hold possession in the corner. I have to say, I couldn't believe that the Forest player that grabbed Bruno Fernandes by the throat wasn't sent off, because we've obviously seen Casemiro being sent off for something similar. I mean, to me, that was even worse because he grabbed Bruno by the Adam's apple pretty tightly at one stage. So I don't know how they can review that and deem it, you know, too soft for a red card. They're laughable, these referees, to try to, you know, justify decisions by saying stuff like, I think it was a Fulham Wolves game earlier in the season where he didn't give a red card for a headbutt because it was, in quotes, a soft headbutt. So last night must have been a soft grab of the Adam's apple, in their opinion. It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, man. It was. And this just shows you the incompetence of the season. And, you know, like you said, Casemiro has been sent off against Crystal Palace, against Wolves, when he did that. But look, if you're a Man United player doing that, then you'll get a red card. But if it's towards Man United player, they won't do anything. So, yeah, I was quite shocked when the referee just said play on, because for me, that incident from yesterday is way worse what Casemiro did that Crystal Palace player. So, yeah. It just shows you that are using these rules. They're not good enough, man. They really aren't. And also another example that they tried to give that customer go offside. So look, it's just funny how VAR has been used this season. And yeah, they just need to fix it.
And of course, they disallowed McTominay's goal against Fulham because it was a subjective offside. I mean, I've never heard of that in my life. What the hell is a subjective offside? Either it's offside or it isn't. They just make it up as they go along to try and justify their decisions, and they're just so incompetent, as you say. So Amrabat played left back last night. A lot of people had different opinions on his performance. I thought obviously he wasn't great defensively. He was way off his man. He wasn't getting close enough and allowing, you know, crosses and to come into the box and pullbacks and so on. But when he was in possession in the other half of the field, I thought he was pretty decent. I think he actually got better as the game went on. He had a better second half than he did in the first half. And in my opinion, I think obviously with us not having an orthodox left back at the moment, I think I'd rather have Amrabat than Lindelof at left back. How do you see it, Horst?
Yeah, I completely agree with Amrabat. First off, it was given lots of balls, and he was kept giving wrong passes. Sometimes he made one pass which wasn't powerful enough, and then lost the ball. So, look, I thought second half when he inverted that midfield position, I thought he done very good. Like, gave good passes, was good timing on the ball as well. So second half much better, but first half, yeah, not good enough, but. Like you said, I still prefer him at left back than Lindelof. For me, Lindelof, I don't rate this player, and I think he's way too soft a footballer to play for Man United. But Amrabat, listen, this is what happens when we don't have a full left back, and this club got rid of Alvaro Fernandez and, you know, sent back Reguilon. So for me, I think Amrabat, yeah, he's got a lot of job to do. But for left back, second half, I thought he done very well when he went to that midfield position for me.
Yeah, Lindelof is way too passive, and I'm hoping that he's going to be sold in the summer. I think he has 1 year left on his deal. I think United exercised the plus one option, and I think they should move him on now, because, you know, he's never going to be anything more than a rotational option. And when he does play, I think it's a significant drop in quality. Last night, I think he didn't have a horrible game, but. Even when he does have a good game, the next one tends to be a really bad one with lots of errors. So I never trust having Lindelof at the back, not at centre half, and not at left back, not at right back. So I would like to move him on. I certainly don't want to see him at left back ever again. We'll have to persist with Amrabat for now in that position, even though it's not ideal, because, as you say, you know, we let Alvaro Fernandez go out on loan and, you know, and sent Reguilon back, which is scandalous, really. I'm assuming the manager at the start of January was under the assumption that Malacia was going to come back in and be available again, but obviously he hasn't. I think Jurrien Timber at Arsenal done his ACL, and he's going to come back sooner than Malacia. I mean, that's an absolute joke, to be honest. Not that I think he's the greatest player in the world either. But, you know, your backup left back is never going to be world class. You know, you can't have two world class players in each position, because obviously the one who's not playing is going to be extremely unhappy and want to leave. So your backup left back is always going to be a bit mediocre in that sense. But the number one priority for me at left back have a left-footed player, and obviously we don't have that available. Some crazy fans have suggested Anthony to play a left back. I don't know what they're smoking. You wouldn't take a risk like that. I know he works hard, you know, when he comes back to help out the fullback, but you wouldn't make him the fullback. That would be extremely dangerous. You could see him getting sent off in that scenario, because he can dive in quite a lot, and he's got quite a temper on him too, as you know. So yes, Dalot, I like his wee shuffle that he did prior to setting up one of McTominay's chances. McTominay should have been on the score sheet last night. There was I think they're both Dalot crosses. There's one where he was around about the penalty spot. He had a free header and he headed it straight at Turner. It was in bread and butter save for the goalkeeper. You know, a world-class centre forward obviously puts that away. And then the one that I just mentioned, the shuffle from Dalot goes out wide, crosses it in, and McTominay gets a header at the near post, which was actually a brilliant save from the goalkeeper. But this is the thing. McTominay's obviously been in the headlines this season for scoring important goals, and he has done. I think he's gained United 12 points in the Premier League. But he's missed an awful lot of chances as well that he should be taking. Last night, he definitely should have scored. Rashford should have scored. He spooned one over the crossbar. I think the ball bobbled just in front of him. United's finishing really is frustrating, Norris, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, man. If you look at the amount of chances we had last night, I think Bruno had the chance of near the box. So, look, it is a bit frustrating with us not finishing on the chances, but look, we're going to McTominay. Look, I know he's been scoring goals, but in my opinion, I don't think he's good enough for me as a midfielder for the club. Like, I know, yeah, he's scoring goals, but for me, I want more from him. Like, I don't think he wasn't that bad yesterday for me, but the chances he had, as like you said, that not cross as well. Like, for me, I'm sorry, but you should be scoring those chances. But yeah, like you said, it was quite embarrassing the way we missed our chances yesterday. McTominay had two chances, Bruno had the chance, and then the box, Rashford as well. So, yeah, I just hope that these players know that when it comes to chances, they need to finish them off, because we've had so many games where we didn't get the result because of chances that we missed. So that needs to fix up. But like you said, McTominay, he should be scoring that chance yesterday.
Yeah, he's not the most technical player in the world, so he's in the team solely to score goals. And when he doesn't do that, then I feel he doesn't really offer much else. But he has got Ten Hag out of a few holes this season, you know, to say the least. If he could just be more consistent with his goal. I mean, look how he buried that header against Aston Villa, which helped us steal that game, let's be honest. We were second best. And then last night, the two chances with his head and he doesn't score. Yeah, just needs a bit to be more consistent. But in the long term, I think he's a sellable asset. I think because of the goals he's got this season, United could, I think they turned down a 30 million offer from West Ham last summer. United could easily demand upwards of 40 million this summer, and plenty of Premier League clubs, probably 10 Premier League clubs, would be willing to pay 40 million for him, because a midfielder who can score goals is invaluable. So if United want to raise cash for a rebuild and stay in line with the FFP and all that, then McTominay is someone they should consider selling and getting good money for in the summer. So just going to do some player ratings now. To be honest with you, there was no real standout performers. Most of the players are sixes. But I would say Rashford's a five. Doesn't want to play centre forward. That's another thing. Doesn't like playing in the middle, and his body language shows it. And he's once again a lethargic performance. So Rashford a five. Onana a seven. And Casemiro a seven. And everybody else gets sixes. Nobody was really bad, and nobody was brilliant last night, it's fair to say. And Ten Hag, you know, getting the 1-0 win, getting through the next round, will give him a 6 out of 10 as well. So that's fairly simple on this occasion. So the biggest news of the night probably is the draw that was made before the game. Liverpool got through against Southampton. I must admit, the two goal scorers for Liverpool last night, I've never heard of them in my life. And that's becoming more frequent now with their injuries. So the obviously not the ideal draw. This is probably, if you could choose a final, this is probably the final that you'd want. But we're playing them in the last eight. But the saving grace for United is that it's at Old Trafford. If it was at Anfield, I don't think we'd have a chance of going through. But at Old Trafford, you factor in Liverpool's injuries. Obviously, it's a few weeks away, so they might have players back. And Hoyland should be back for that game. I think United do have a chance in this. Obviously, beat Liverpool in the last FA Cup meeting at Old Trafford in 2021, I think it was, 3-2, I think.
Yeah.
Dean Henderson was in nets that time, and Bruno scored a late free kick to win the game for United. It's just for some strange reason, I think United could get through this. Might go to extra time, but I think United could beat a depleted Liverpool at Old Trafford. How do you see it, Oris?
Yeah, obviously, it's a tough match, like you said. One thing that I was happy about is that it's at Old Trafford. So we know, obviously, I hope the fans are up for it. Like, big, big game. Because obviously, we do play Liverpool again, you know, in the Premier League. So play them twice. So listen, something tells me that we will beat them. And for me, I genuinely think if we do beat Liverpool, then we should be favourites for this competition. Obviously, I know there's City out there, but look, probably be another Manchester derby in the final, but look, Liverpool won't be easy. If they have, oh no, the draw is probably in what March the 16th, so they could have their players back from injury. But look, it won't be easy for sure. I hope it doesn't go to extra time, because I feel like that makes it even more tired for these players. Because I don't want to see more injuries. Because for me, I do think extra time for these players, I don't think so, man. There's gonna be a lot of muscle injuries. So for me, I hope we can beat them in 90 minutes. And I do think sometimes we will beat them. Obviously, Hoyland should be fit and ready to start. So that's one plus. And yeah, we just have to be on it. For me, first goal, whoever gets the first goal is crucial. If we get the first goal, obviously silence the little fans. I mean, come on, they only bring the speakers anyways. But look, we should be. If the fans are up for it, we should be beating this Liverpool side, hopefully.
It's also worth mentioning that Liverpool have a stacked fixture list around then, in multiple competitions. Like, on the 7th of March, they're away in Prague against Sparta. Then on the 10th of March, they play Manchester City at Anfield. Then they play the second leg against Sparta Prague on the Thursday, the 14th of March. And then they'll likely play United on the 17th of March on the Sunday. And then they've got a Merseyside derby after that, and then Brighton after that. So they've got a fairly congested fixture list. And if their injury crisis doesn't ease, it's going to be hard for them to manage all these games and all these competitions. So given that, I think United have the week off in the build-up to this game. And Liverpool will be playing on the Thursday night in the Europa League. So I think that also gives us an advantage. So for some reason, I feel as if United will win the FA Cup game, but we won't win the league match against them. I don't know why I feel that way, but I just do. I feel like we're going to make it to the FA Cup final this year for some reason. Hopefully win it this time. Hopefully we don't have to play Manchester City, but we probably will have to play them. I think they'll beat Newcastle at home. Let's just hope if we get through that, we could get the winner of Wolves and Coventry in the semi-final. Chelsea, who did Chelsea get in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup?
Leicester,
yeah. Well, it won't be easy for Chelsea. They only beat Leeds 3-2 last night. So Leicester, who are top of the championship, should be an even more difficult game for them. So I just have a feeling that we might get through that one. I could end up having egg on my face, but I'm just quietly confident about that one. So I have the opposite opinion about the weekend, though. another trip to the Etihad. We've taken quite a few batterings in this fixture, both at home and away. But, you know, 6-3 last season. I think, was it 4-1 the season before? They've obviously beaten us 3-0 at Old Trafford, you know, I think 2-0 as well, which was the most one-sided 2-0 ever, if you remember. It was the dying days of Solskjaer's reign, where they just toyed with us and only scored 2 goals. It really should have been a lot more. I think last season we played them 3 times. We beat them at Old Trafford, and then we lost at the Etihad convincingly, and then lost the FA Cup final to them. I feel it, and yes, this season at Old Trafford, we got nowhere near them, although we weren't helped by an early penalty that was given to them under controversial circumstances. But at their ground, it's going to be difficult for us with no orthodox left back and no Hoyland. And Erling Haaland scored 5 the other night. That's pretty ominous. I can see us getting hammered in this game, if I'm being honest, Orest. How do you see it?
Yeah. Tough game, obviously. No Hoyland, no fit left back. So, yeah. A lot of people would say, oh, Manchester Derby form goes out the window. But I don't think for this Man United team, I don't think form really goes out the window. Because, look, I know it's Manchester Derby. Some United fans will roll back Man United to get a result. But, listen, I know we went to Anfield. We did have Hoyland and a left club. And we went to Anfield and got a 0-0 draw. But, for me, this City game, we know we'll be pumped up. Obviously, Haaland 5 goals. Finn De Bruyne got 4 assists. So, and
they're ready. Yeah. De Bruyne is something else.
Yes, he is. But, I mean, look. I hope it's not worse than the 3-0 when they beat us at Old Trafford this season, but you just never know with this Man United team. But if someone we can turn up, and you know, Chelsea got, which for me, I think Chelsea should have won with a chance that they had against City. But look, I think Ten Hag will be saying to these boys, just give everything you can. But I really can see United just sitting back, and a couple players just walking around and City just running blitz for us. So, yeah, I'm not confident for me.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to do something similar to what we did at Anfield and just park the bus, get numbers behind the ball and just have the odd counter-attack. The thing is, though, City are much better at playing against that than Liverpool. I think if we sit back too much, eventually City will score. Yeah, it's going to be so difficult for us to score with missing our top goal scorer. We miss far too many chances, and we might only get 3 or 4 chances in this game, and we have to take them. And everybody has to work hard, including Rashford. Everybody has to work their socks off. And you know, but I just think that City are going to expose that weakness at left back. They're going to target that. I feel they'd probably get Foden or Bernardo out on that side, and get Kyle Walker bombing down the wing and expose their weakness there. If they score early, I think the floodgates could open, and it could be any score then. You know, that 6-3 last season flattered us. I think it was 6-1, and then Martial came off the bench and got a couple and put a bit of, you know, respect on the scoreline, sort of. But yeah, it could be another tanking. But and if we do get murdered in this game, do you think Ten Hag potentially could be in trouble on Monday morning? How do you see it?
I think there'll be a lot of talk definitely in the media and obviously online, but if he wants to get back to him, I still don't think he'll get sacked, but I do think there'll be a lot of people, you know, saying that they want him out and stuff. But look, I think the people upstairs, they'll judge him off, I think, when the season finishes. But there'll definitely be a lot of talk Monday morning or Monday afternoon about, probably there'll probably be a lot of leaks, you know how many now there's leaks and players coming out. So yeah, don't be surprised if there's a lot of leaks Monday morning after the Manchester Derby defeat.
How do you feel about Ten Hag yourself? Would you be willing to give him another season, or would you change the manager in the summer?
Look, I'm in the sentence of, for me, I'm not a fan that wants, the club to sack every manager. Obviously, Ratcliffe, he's bringing his own people. I would love to see, get another season with those people upstairs, but something tells me that I don't think he'll be here this summer. Because I do think because I did watch the interview, I think Franklin's interview about to coming out saying that about Ten Hag. So look, personally for me, I would like to see another season of him with the structure that he has. But if they decide to get rid of him and get, a good candidate that they think that's replaceable, then so be it. But for me, my stance is that I'd like to see another season with him. But yeah, that's my thoughts.
Yeah, my feeling is that they will make a change. They would probably have their man lined up before the end of the season. Yeah, because I mean Liverpool, Bayern, and Barcelona are looking for a coach. There ain't that many world-class managers around, so United need to make a decision early, I feel. Otherwise, they're not going to have anyone available, to go for at the end of the season. So I think they'll make a decision on that fairly early. Look at Tuchel at Bayern Munich. He's effectively been, dismissed, but he's going to stay there until the end of the season. I couldn't see that happening at United. I couldn't see a scenario where in March, Ineos decide that they're going to remove Ten Hag at the end of the season, and Ten Hag just sees out the season. That he wouldn't be happy about that. They would probably have to, once he make the decision to sack him, then he would probably have to go right away. But United's new manager might not be available until the end of the season, so could be another interim situation. So maybe they would ideally like him to see out the season, I think. But if there's more embarrassing defeats, and there's been quite a few under Ten Hag, and Sunday has all the ingredients for that, then they might be forced to dismiss him early. But they probably don't want to do that. If it can be helped, they want to take their time because they're still in the process of appointing the new directors, the new recruitment department. Omar Brada hasn't started yet, neither has Dan Ashworth, and they're going to bring in a head of recruitment to work under Dan Ashworth, whether it be Jason Wilcox or somebody else. They want to get those all in place and then delegate the decisions to them, ideally. But at the same time, they need to decide on who their manager for next season is going to be quite in March, I feel, because like I say, the market's going to be quite competitive for managers. I think there's has been stories this week about Zidane again. I'll believe it when I see it, to be honest with you. He hasn't shown any appetite to manage again since leaving Real Madrid for the second time. And I don't think he even speaks fluent English. So I'm sure they'd love to make that happen. And maybe Jean-Claude Blanc, being a fellow Frenchman working at United, can, who knows him, I believe, could maybe persuade him. But feeling that they're going to have to be looking at the likes of Julian Nagelsmann or Roberto De Zerbi or something like that. But I feel it's inevitable that they're going to make a change because new owners or co-owners always bring in their own man. Even at Birmingham City, when John Eustace was in the playoff spots at the start of the season, was it Tom Brady's consortium comes in, remove him, and then bring in Wayne Rooney, and it's a total disaster. So even when it's unnecessary, they always make a change. I mean, Todd Boehly, it didn't take long to get rid of Thomas Tuchel and bring in Graham Potter. I just hope that when United do this, that they get the decision right. There's really, apart from Zidane, who's unlikely in my opinion, there's nobody out there I'm absolutely dying to have as United manager. There's not really, I mean, when you look at the bookies list, it's it doesn't fill you full of enthusiasm. We're looking at the likes of Julian Nagelsmann and De Zerbi and I was going to say Alonso, but I think that's unlikely as well. We were linked with the Sporting manager, but then there'll be a similar appointment to Ten Hag, where he's dominated the minor league, and then he's coming to United, and it's a massive step up. You know, even and that Ajax fan on Twitter, he has nearly a million followers. His handle is at the European Lad. He says that he thinks Ten Hag is out of his depth at Old Trafford. He thinks the job's too big for him. That's a pretty damning assessment from an Ajax fan. So yeah, and I understand that Ineos want to get rid of Anthony as well. They don't believe he's been good value, and you know, can't blame them on that. So if the new co-owners are starting to get rid of Ten Hag signings, that looks pretty ominous as well. So, I think it's a case of when rather than if, in my opinion. I think he would have to qualify for the Champions League and win the FA Cup to stay at United Field for another season. But I don't think both of those things are likely to happen. So, if Ten Hag is sacked, Orest, who would be your preference?
Obviously, with the candidates, there's unfortunately been linked with Graham Potter, which for me, we need to keep far away from him as possible.
No.
But if he was to get sacked, for me, my top one would probably be Nagelsmann. But for me, I just think Nagelsmann is a similar appointment to Ralf Rangnick. Like, they're both, obviously, they're both styles that counter-pressing, make sure their players are pressing out, but it didn't work out Ralf Rangnick before, and I don't think it will work out Nagelsmann. But for me, the best, probably, if you look at the list, it's probably Nagelsmann, really. De Zerbi, he's all right, but I think his team concedes a lot. So, my top one, probably Nagelsmann. I know he doesn't have that much experience in the Premier League, but look, if there's like three people on the list for me to choose from, Potter, De Zerbi and Nagelsmann, for me, I'm going with Nagelsmann. Obviously, he's the only 36 youngest manager. So, look, I know he's similar to Ralf Rangnick, but for me, I think he's the best name out in the list. But you just never know who Ratcliffe has, who the people have in their mind. Because yes, we might be linked to certain managers, but they might get someone who we've never been linked and might shock us. But for me, I don't want normal interim. For me, I want a manager that has a style and that's here for the future. So let's see with Ineos. They've got a big summer ahead for them. I think this summer's probably the biggest summer United will have. So yeah, that for me, Nagelsmann's who I would get.
Yeah, I think I would go along with that. I think Hoffenheim, he took them from the second division to the Champions League in just 2 years. RB Leipzig, I think he finished second and third with them. Then at Bayern, he won the league. There was when he was sacked in the second season at Bayern, they were still within a shout of, they still had a chance of winning the treble. I don't know why he was dismissed. I think it was for, you know, off the field reasons, something to do with the fact that his girlfriend was a journalist and they felt there was a lot of leaks and they felt that he was, you know, giving her information supposedly, and a lot of stuff and was appearing in the media about the players and stuff. So it really wasn't footballing reasons as to why he was dismissed, and obviously the Tuchel appointment didn't really work out for them. So, and he's still only 36, as you say, so he's still got a long career ahead of him. So, obviously, he's not going to be available to you know, mid July, probably, with being in charge of Germany at the Euros. If we did appoint him before the Euros, we'd be desperate to see Germany do well then. So then he can convince us that he's the man for United job, a bit like that time when we appointed Van Gaal. We wanted Holland to do well at the World Cup, so he would look like a good manager, which they did to a large extent. They got to the semi-finals and thumped Spain 5-1 famously in the group stages, and we thought, wow, this is amazing. He's going to bring this exciting attacking football at Old Trafford, and obviously that didn't really materialise. After we got beat 5-3 by Leicester, he reverted to more possession, safe football, and sideways passing. And you know, we went nearly a full season without scoring a goal in the first half at Old Trafford. It was abysmal to watch. Definitely the Van Gaal era is probably the least entertaining football that we've watched since Fergie retired. It was terrible. But yeah, Nagelsmann, I think, has got potential. So I would probably, you know, give him the job out of all the names that have been mentioned. But a new name came to the fore this week, Simone Inzaghi, the Inter Milan manager. I understand that he plays more of a 3-5-2 formation with the wingbacks, so that would be quite a change for Manchester United fans. But he's meant to be a really intelligent coach. He obviously got entered to the Champions League final last year, which was a hell of an achievement because it wasn't a Champions League final squad that he had to work with. How would you feel about United bringing in an Italian coach that plays 3-5-2, Orest?
Obviously, Inzaghi's, I think he's a top coach. Like I said, he brought Inter to the Champions League final last season, which, when I look at the squad, I don't think he was capable of doing that, which he did. But Inzaghi coming in at Man United with 3-5-2, I don't think the formation 3-5-2 would work. Because we will need two strikers, and you know, we've only got one so far. But look, he is a top coach, like I said, but I don't see him working at United. Like, it's a similar one. I know they're not the same, but it's in the continent. Conte, regarding to formation, obviously he loves 4-3-1, but obviously we was linked with him way before. But going to Inzaghi, top coach, but I don't think he would suit United for me, my opinion.
Yeah, it would certainly be a bit of a difference, a bit of a change to what we used to. But if Radcliffe and Brailsford decide to go down that road, then I would go along with it. He's certainly a very smart coach who seems he's the 1-4-0 in their last game, which is an example of how they are really good going forward, but also really tight at the back. There's a nice balance there. Yeah, they've been quite an exciting team, albeit you know, some of them are a wee bit they're veterans of the game, like their team that started against that's a very new team. Salernitana, who they beat 4-0. The goals came from Marcus Turan, Martinez, and Denzel Dumfries, and Marco Arnautovic, who of course nearly signed for United. They replaced Onana with Jan Sommer, very good veteran goalkeeper. Then they have Pavard, Stefan de Vrij, Bastani as their back three. Then the wing backs of Denzel Dumfries and Augusto. In the centre of the park, they have Barella, Mkhitaryan, who we all know from his time at United, and Hacken in the centre. And then up front, they have Marcus Thuram and Lautaro Martinez, who of course is the Argentine striker. So it looks like a really good team on paper, and it's an interesting system. And so I think that's a wee bit of a left field option. That's probably not going to happen, but I wouldn't be entirely against it. Yeah, Nagelsmann would probably be my favorite. De Zerbi, yeah, I think Brighton are far too inconsistent. They can see too many goals. They can be brilliant one day and awful the next. I mean, they lost 4-0 to Luton, for God's sake. I mean, that's absolutely diabolical. They can go and beat United at Old Trafford, and then the next game they'll go get tanked by Wolves. I know they're not, you know, they're a team that it's the best run club in the UK. They their scouting system is phenomenal. They unearth all these hidden gems, but I suppose it's still not a world-class team by any means. So for him to have them in the European spots, you know, in the knockout stages of the Europa League or Europa Conference League, whatever it is, I think it is the Europa League, isn't it? It's Villa that's in the Europa Conference League. Yeah. So for them to be in the knockout stages of the Europa League is phenomenal achievement. But I just think that he's unproven as a manager. You know, was he being at Brighton? What was the team in Ukraine that he managed as well? Shakhtar Donetsk. He doesn't have experience of winning, you know, big honours in big leagues, if you like. So it would be a massive risk, in my opinion. So I think given Nagelsmann's experience and his usefulness, I would probably give him a go out of all the names that have been linked. But if Zidane was available, I would 100% give him a go. Now, never been outside his comfort zone at Real Madrid, and obviously he's had, you know, a phenomenal team to work with there. So we're still unsure as to how good he actually is as a coach, but I'd be more than willing to find out. Would you take Zidane if we could get him, Horst?
Yeah, I would. But like I said, I don't think he would want to work in the Premier League. I don't think that's his dream. But look, if he's open to a Premier League move and if he changes his mind, then I'll be open to see how it works, really. Because we do have, obviously, we have former players that used to work that customer of our own, so I'll be up for it, definitely. And if he was open and available to join us.
So I'm going to spare you the problem of making a prediction for Sunday, because I know my prediction is going to be a defeat, and I don't even want to think about it. If I'm being honest, I think it's going to be a heavy defeat, so I'm not even going to make a prediction, and I'm not going to put you through that either. Because it's that one fixture a season where it's almost a guaranteed loss. Like I know it wasn't under Ollie, but it definitely has been in recent times. I think they've gone up a couple of levels since the Solskjaer era, and we at the moment are just riddled with injuries, missing so many key players, and not even having a left back or a forward. And Martinez, I think, is crucial for us. So I don't give us much chance of winning the game, especially with Erling Haaland in this kind of form. Probably really disappointing for the media as well. They were probably hoping to build this as Haaland against Haaland. I know Sky Sports News have already been doing a bit of that, comparing their stats, which is a bit harsh on Haaland, you know, because he's only started scoring. So obviously Haaland's stats are going to look better. And, you know, Haaland is way more experienced. But they're not going to be able to build it as the Haaland against Haaland this summer, this weekend, which they would have done on Sky. But yeah, United don't really have a chance in this game. If we park the bus, maybe. But as I said, I think City are better at playing through the low block than what Liverpool are. So I think we'll eventually concede in the first half anyway. I don't see a way in which United win this game. But what we're looking for is a bit of respect and a bit of pride from United. Rather than going out there and getting battered 6-0, if they lost 3-2, that would be almost respectable. You know, we don't want to lose any games, but we have to be honest about where we are at the moment. And if we got a respectable loss, then we'd have to accept that, I suppose, and Ten Hag wouldn't be in any danger if that happened. But if he lost 6 or 7, then Ten Hag's going to be under severe pressure again. It eased all the pressure by being unbeaten from the start of the year to the Fulham game, but the Fulham games really brought us back to square one, because that was our easiest fixture in February, and we lost it, which is, you know, massively disappointing and left us miles off top four now. We're kind of relying on fifth being a Champions League spot, but not even convinced that we'll be able to overtake Spurs, to be honest with you. So I can see United finishing sixth, and our only hope of style we've seen something from this season is winning the FA Cup. But like you say, we're probably going to have to beat Liverpool and Manchester City to win the FA Cup. And that's going to be a tall order, isn't it? But I would love to see United win the FA Cup and get another trophy on the board. But I'm not convinced that would be enough to save him. It wasn't enough to save Van Gaal, was it?
Yeah, it wasn't. So the City game is huge, but like you said, if it was 2-1 City, I'll genuinely take the league, because like you said, I have to accept where Man United are right now. And if City was to win 2-1 or 4-3 or whatever scoreline that is not more than any stupidness, then I'll take it. But this FA Cup is huge for both the players and the managers. Potential job. So look, I think it's gonna be tough. Obviously, we play Liverpool twice, see this weekend. So I think this Sunday, honestly, if City get a quick goal, and it could be problems for us, because we saw last time 6-3 and what they did to us. So yeah.
Okay, we will wrap it up there for tonight. Please, everybody, like the video, subscribe to the channel, and get more of your thoughts in. And I shall see you again next time, Morris.
Yeah, big up, Kyle. Big up, Fabian.
All right, I'll see you later.